Hey there, thanks for coming. Take a seat.
Time to retire to the drawing room.
We've got a bit of a nerd festival happening in the drawing room at the moment. A word nerd and a science nerd. I'm sure they're not offended by that word. My guests are Mary Norris, otherwise known as the Comma Queen, and Maggie Ryan Sanford, science writer and media producer. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much.
So nerd is no longer really offensive, is it? It's kind of almost a compliment these days.
I would say so.
I think so. It's a step up from geek.
Yeah.
You think it's a step up from geek as well?
I do. I think it's a step up from geek.
I was of the geek generation. I embraced geek. I was an art geek. I called myself an art geek in high school, thinking the origin of the word was a little more edgy than nerd, which was, you know, the circus freak who bites off the head of the chicken.
All right. Nerd is right out of Dr. Seuss.
Is it really?
Yes. Dr. Seuss invented the word nerd.
So do you self-identify as a nerd?
No. I self-identify as a cool person.
That's right. Most of us should, I hope.
Most of us should, but it's funny because it's the whole notion of a nerd has entirely transformed. In fact, it implies so much about being brilliant. People want to be a nerd because you just signify to the world is I'm really amazingly smart.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Now, Mary, you've spent 3 decades at The New Yorker guarding traditions of grammar and the usage of language. How do you judge whether or not to accept an evolution in usage? Because that's the counter-argument often, that things have changed and we need to accept the change.
Well, things do change and we accept the change after a while. At The New Yorker, we tend to hold off for a little while on things and see if they're going to hang around. The most recent word that I accepted was hella. Do you have that here? I think it just means very.
Yes,
extremely
does.
Very.
Yeah. Yeah,
in a hellish way.
I'm from the west coast of the United States where that comes from. I understand the origin is of the west coast. And we used to say to each other, I am from Seattle. If you meet someone from California, you can say we have hella in common. So it's like very or
hella,
a lot.
Hella solidarity. I like it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I like the way you've just defined that. It depends how long it sticks around. So what's your time frame for how long it might stick around to make it legitimate?
Well, things have been becoming legitimate faster all the time, I have to say. I think what we do, though, we have a lot of usages that are on the verge of being quaint, and we don't want to be quaint. We don't want the magazine to look antiquated. So we're going to have to think a little bit ahead in the future. We still put a hyphen in the word teenager, and a lot of people make fun of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't put a hyphen in teenager. Sorry.
I don't defend it. All I'm saying is that I'm following the rules as long as that's what they're paying me to do.
Can I ask your opinion on the use of literally these days?
Well, literally is literally overdone these days, of course.
Literally. Yeah. Now, Mary, you're a comma queen. Do we overuse commas?
Well, at The New Yorker, we are thought to overuse commas. They never accuse us of not putting in enough commas. We put one in pretty much wherever we can. I think, in general, writers don't overuse commas, though.
Should they use them more?
Oh, I'm not saying they should use them more. They should just know why they're using them.
Yeah, they have a purpose.
Right.
My English professor in college would disagree with you regarding my own writing. He told me that I overused commas. I use them to help the reader get through the piece the way that I hear it in my head.
Yes.
Which
yes.
isn't grammatically necessarily the right thing to do, but I'll have you read some of my work.
It's a pause.
Sometimes you can tell me.
It's time to stop and then keep going.
Well, it is a pause, but the way we use it at The New Yorker, we are trying to underline the grammar of the sentence at the same time. And sometimes the copy editor and the writer disagree about that. You'll be happy to know that the writer wins.
Yeah, that is pleasing to know. I'm glad. That's a relief to us all. Now, Maggie, do you have any grammar peeves, things that do your head in?
Oh, literally is the one. People, I understand.
That is your one.
Yeah, I understand that. I think Oxford is the dictionary that adds the new words every year. They have allowed for the definition to be figuratively as well, like the opposite of literally.
They caved.
I know. And I'm fine generally with the lexicon changing. I mean, you know, Shakespeare made up words right and left, and thank you to him for that. And I like to do it myself sometimes. The word that you want doesn't exist in the English language, and so you can be creative about it. But when it already means something, why would you change it to the opposite? Seems lazy. That's all I'm saying.
You're trying to actually be quite understated about this, aren't you? You're trying to actually seem like you're more relaxed than you are. You're angry.
You can see in person, my ears are shooting out.
You're passionate.
Yeah.
Mary, do you get lots of really angry correspondence? I mean, readers distraught at the misusage of language or who want to challenge you about something?
Constantly, yes. I did a video for The New Yorker recently that was defending the use of than as a preposition. There's a sentence in my book that's, Dee was 2 years younger than me. Scores of people have been in touch. They say it should be then I. I was always taught that if the sentence finishes out, then I am, not then me am. And I learned that too in the third grade. But the fact is that it says in the dictionary that than is also a preposition. You can just make it the object of a preposition and give it an object, so it's then me. But I tell you, I've gotten so much mail about this that I was tempted to change it in the paperback.
That
version.
Much?
You were gonna cave?
Just to shut them up, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. I didn't, because I like it the way it is. That's how it came out of me. And it's also at a point in the book where the subject matter gets very intimate. Mm. I've been talking about gender in a grammatical sense, and I'm going into gender in the personal sense. I had a transgender sister, and this is what I'm talking about now is pronouns to me. Mm-hmm. People should think twice before they criticize you when you're about to say something very intimate.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you've really made a very strong statement there. I like it. You're in the drawing room, and my guests are Mary Norris. She's the author of Between You and Me, Confessions of a Comma Queen, and Maggie Ryan Sanford, science writer and media producer. Maggie, you're a bit of a Renaissance woman, right?
Uh-oh. There's that Uh-oh. Word.
It's overused too, actually, but it's a fantastic yeah. word. You've got a bit of a hand in science, writing, blogging, radio, comedy. You're an all-rounder. Do they blend together easily, or do you find yourself compartmentalizing aspects of your life? Mm. How do you manage that?
For me, they blend together easily. I've been told many times in my life that they shouldn't. I majored in English and minored in biology in college and had professors on both sides telling me that I was wasting my time trying to combine the two. But the pursuit of understanding language and how people use language and the pursuit of understanding the world around us through systems of science are very similar. Both involve creative thinking, both involve learning from the people who have come before you. And more, I think people are seeing that the two, really just all of the disciplines, can learn from each other and be richer for it.
Science has a bit of a communication problem too, right? just a slight communication problem. It's not, scientists are not great communicators.
Right. I think we're getting better at that. There's a movement, I don't know if we have a name for it yet, but science communication is now a term that people use and that people can go to college for, can go to university, can get a PhD in science communication. There are scientists studying the science of science communication, but scientists themselves still have the reputation of being humorless and emotionless. And that still is a problem for people like me who are emotional people, you know, admittedly emotional, and try to be humorous in life and feel like they don't necessarily belong in that community. And it's taken me a long time to come back around to realizing that that shouldn't be the case. Everybody should be welcome in that community. And also, by the way, scientists who consider themselves unemotional are still human beings and are slave to their emotions too, so we might as well just be honest about that.
Maggie, you've written a lot about the relationship between science and art. Do we need to combine the two when teaching, do you think?
Absolutely. That's just straight out, definitely. We are fairly good at teaching art, not nearly enough, at least in the United States. I think Mary might agree that there should be more funding for art education. Science tells us that when people are encouraged, kids especially, are encouraged to be creative, they're tapping into that intimate place in themselves where they, being who they truly are, they're being their authentic selves, is this word that we use in the education community. When you're in a place where you are comfortable, you're more likely to retain information. We also know that when science curricula contains information that's relevant to the person receiving it, they're more likely to retain it. If you're learning alongside something that you like, all of these reasons, you know, it's a more and more we're looking at science education holistically. Again, I think there's no reason to have the disciplines be separate.
What about comedy? Should we use that more to teach subjects that are traditionally regarded as really difficult and dense?
Absolutely. My point of reference has always been The Simpsons. I'm a Simpsons generation kid, and when you think about all of the cultural references, usually to films or books or other cultural points that people who are watching broadcast television might not otherwise know about, you've got Bart Simpson quoting them, you've got these whole references stylistically, you know, an entire episode of The Simpsons that's based on The Shining, you know, directed by Stanley Kubrick. You're bridging gaps, yeah, and it's part of the cultural lexicon before you even know it. So if there's a way, that's my mission in life, basically, is to see if there's a way to teach people without them realizing they're being taught. And when something's
like
funny,
you're tricking people. I love
yeah.
it.
If you laugh at something, you want to share that with somebody else. And so automatically you have a reason to remember it.
Mary, do you have a pet peeve, something that really annoys you?
Oh, I think it's the title of my book that spells it out. The Between You and Me. My pet peeve is when people, when they use I instead of me, for instance. I went to the store for coffee for Tommy and me. So many people try to be polite. They think it's more formal to say for Thomas and I. And of course, if you turned it around and put yourself first, you would never say I went to get coffee for I. You would always say me.
People trying too hard.
It's an educated person's mistake, yeah, right? Or someone who's insecure.
I have another pet peeve, if I may.
I've got two.
Regarding...
Well, you're indulging? Go.
I know. This is pointing the sights right on public broadcasting, so I hope you're ready for it.
Okay.
But regarding insecurity and the way that people speak, I've noticed that a lot of folks on the radio, on television, when they're trying to sound intelligent, do this thing, which I call the very sort of, where they make a statement that involves the term very sort of ego. I've heard people say, oh, it's this very sort of cathartic moment, or it's this very sort of...
Very sort of.
Yeah. And once you start listening for it...
Okay, I don't do it. I don't think I'd do it.
You probably don't.
But I want to do it now.
It happens
a lot. Everyone else is doing it.
But what are you really doing? You know, you're making a non-statement, you know.
That is an interesting combination. I probably say sort of a lot. I just said
probably,
which is kind of like saying sort of.
I know,
and
now
then I said kind of.
Down.
But the combination of the intensifier very, yeah, and then the thing that you're trying to minimize it with, sort of, is very interesting.
Right. Just make the choice.
How
it's
about
cathartic.
Very sort of interesting.
People say yes, no.
They say
yes.
That all the time.
Why do they say that?
Yeah, no. It's sort of.
No, no, no. If you say it three times, it turns back into a yes, I guess.
That's
I think it's a polite thing, you know.
I think so.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
well, maybe.
That's right. It's softening the blow.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder also, Mary, do you get many letters of complaint? I know you get lots of letters of complaint, but do they contain grammatical errors? And is that always hilarious?
Always. Especially amused by the ones that get my name wrong. Dear Ms. Morris instead of Norris, you know. They're off to a bad start, right? I don't have to pay any attention to
that. You do wonder about the attention to detail there.
Yes, yes.
Now, Maggie, you're currently working on a book about dolphins. Tell us something shocking about dolphins.
Something shocking about dolphins. I think the most shocking thing that I've learned about dolphins, one of the reasons that I started writing the book, is a scientist back in the 1960s and 70s. His name was John C. Lilly. He started out as a legitimate scientist. He had people like Carl Sagan on board with his work. They were trying basically to teach dolphins to speak English using their blowhole as a mouth.
As you
and,
do. Yeah, give it,
like
you
do.
Let's try this.
One of the experiments, really where it started to go wrong, was when he built a special house in which a female researcher and a male dolphin would cohabitate, the idea being that he would hear English so much and it would be sort of immersion education for him to learn English, the dolphin. And ultimately, dolphin's a social creature. He ended up becoming rather amorous towards the woman. Though her relationship, she considered it very professional. She ended up having to do certain things for him to keep the relationship, to keep the research going.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Oh, goodness. This is shocking. I asked you for shocking, and you found shocking.
There's dolphins. They're a very physical species. They're very kinesthetic. So there's a lot more where that came from.
That is incredible. Well, what a note to leave us. That is a very good conversation.
You're welcome, Australia.
I want to thank you both, to Mary and Maggie. Thanks. I've really enjoyed my time with you both.
Thank you.
And Mary Norris is the author of Between You and Me, Confessions of a Comma Queen. And Maggie Ryan Sanford is a blogger, writer, media producer, as well as her day job as an evaluation associate at the Science Museum of Minnesota. Both are in Australia as guests of the Interrobang Festival at Melbourne's Wheeler Centre.